The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, friends, and welcome to your Monday edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. It's Monday, September the 30th. Ipswich Town are going to finish September unbeaten in the Premier League. And, friends, they've not lost a game since August the 24th, when they only lost to mighty Manchester City, where they scored first. And they've just drawn, of course, with a Champions League side at Portman Road, a side they probably could have beaten. Aston Villa 2-2 in a pulsating, cracking game of football in Suffolk, which we're here to break down now. I am joined by two men I tolerate for work purposes. First of all, I'm going to go with Alex Jones, who spoke live to the nation yesterday, and Colin Murray, with our very own Cole Fuller as well. Spreading the brand, being the brand, the face of the brand. AJ, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, it's a little bit weird when you go on live radio, live national radio, and it probably dawns on you about 2 minutes before you're going on when they phone you up saying, I'm just making sure the line's all right. And you're like, oh, okay, I actually have to go do this now. But yeah, I hope it went okay. Hope that some people managed to listen in, and that was the start of quite a busy day in the end.
What a day. So you were live to the nation on Five Live. Your partner in crime and elder statesman, Stuart Watson, was meant to be on Five Live, but got bumped off for Mark Ashton, Stu. This is an outrage, and I'm immediately cancelling my licence fee in protest.
Absolute joke. Don't they know who I am? Does Mark Ashton really, is he going to bring better value to national
absolutely,
listeners?
Absolutely
than
not.
Me?
Absolutely
don't think not. So.
Yeah. What does he know about Ipswich Town?
Exactly. So, yeah, I didn't quite catch Alex in the morning because I was getting prepared to leave, but I'll have a little listen back on catch up. But I'm told it went very well. And isn't it great that there's such national interest in Ipswich Town again? Where were they when we were going to insert run-of-the-mill League One club?
Exactly.
Not interested.
Johnny come lately. Pathetic. Friends, before we get going on the game, because clearly there's a lot to talk about, and it was another brilliant game at Portman Road. You did your post-match reaction, speaking of national interest, in the new TV studio perched atop the players' tunnel. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what that's like? It's obviously wasn't used yesterday, but one hell of a vista from that big window you were sitting in front of, Stewie.
Yeah, I don't know if people have watched the post-match video verdict that Alex and I recorded, but it almost looks like we're in front of a green screen. Doesn't look quite real. And that's kind of how it feels sitting in it. We were fortunate to... It wasn't quite in use. I don't know whether that was just because it wasn't quite wired up and ready in time. I'm told that as of the middle of last week, it was still a bit of a building site. So maybe there's some finishing touches. It might just be that Sky always do the kind of Super Sunday coverage from the second game, which was Old Trafford. So they did it from that base. But there was just a handful of chairs in there that I think sort of staff used and trialled for this game. It's like watching the game through a sort of a giant cinema screen, a huge widescreen TV. Really nice view. Still staggers me that they've built that on top of that security box in such a short period of time. The only downside is I do miss the little welcome to Portman Road sign that had that used to.
Oh, they got rid of that, have they?
Is that am I making that up? Is that gone or is that? You're looking at me weirdly now.
I can't have to remember. I was going to go. You put up a photo of the actual box itself before the game, which is actually what alerted me to the fact that it had been built and it was there and I'd be able to see it was different. So it does look actually from it. Yeah, they've got rid of that. It looks kind of all very shiny is the best way to put it. Like you can see all the reflections off it. And then they've got an electronic board just above the tunnel where the players come out. So yeah, go have a look at the video that we've done where you can see the view from it. Stu's put up a photo of what it looks like if you weren't at the game yesterday. But it looks totally different to what I thought it was going to be when it when we knew it was coming in.
Speaking of showing you new friends, before we do get to the game, I apologise for not being with you last week. I'm currently having a new kitchen installed at Heath Towers, which is just literally beneath me. And so the noise was not conducive to a good audio experience for you, dear listeners and viewers. AJ did make reference to me getting drilled in the kitchen, which I thought sounded like a euphemism or some sort of horrible medical exam. I was actually drilling in my kitchen. That's what was going on. So there we go. Right then. Shall we move on to the game, friends? Let's hear, first of all, shall we, from Kieran McKenna, while the boys recover their composure.
I thought it was a really good game. You know, that's important to us. Since I arrived here, one of the big things on the checklist was, you know, making Portman Road a fantastic place to come and watch football, give the supporters an entertaining game and a team to be proud of and represent the club well, and they've certainly done that today. So that's a big positive, I think. Of course, we want to get as many points as we can. But again, to compete as we did against a team of the calibre that Aston Villa are, and a team now with great familiarity that have been working under a very, very good manager with almost the same group of players for a few seasons now, and us, as we know, to be very much a team building and rebuilding at the moment. So to be as competitive as we were in the game, I think, is a big, big positive. And another point and another game unbeaten, and we move on.
Could have won it towards the end. You and the team pushing for it.
Yeah, we could have, and I think, look, we always back ourselves at Portman Road that that's going to be the case. We think if we can make the game competitive, if we can impose ourselves in the game and it goes to the later stages, then we back to our fitness. We'll always hold strong, and we know here with the crowd that they'll always give us the extra yard and the extra edge, and they've done that. So we had a lot of set plays, some moments around the box, and credit to them, they stood up and defended the set plays very well, as they do, and we weren't quite able to get it over the line.
Okay, right, and Stu, do you want to kick us off with your opening thoughts on this? Because A, it was a brilliant game of football, and that's kind of now par for the course at Ipswich Town. Do you remember when watching Ipswich Town was a bit of a chore? Now, even in the Premier League, watching them is a joy. What did you make of the game and another good result for Ipswich Town?
Well, the result is obviously fantastic against a team, keep saying it, finished fourth last season, preparing to face Bayern Munich on Wednesday night. So to get something against them is brilliant. But the manner in which it was done was even more pleasing. We pondered what Ipswich's approach would be to the Premier League, whether they would have to be more pragmatic or whether they would keep this brave and bold playing style that swept them to back-to-back promotions. Well, we saw from the Liverpool game straight away that they were going to stick to their principles and try to go toe-to-toe. That's not to say that there was a nice little exchange between a reporter and Kieran McKenna at the pre-match press conference this week, where the reporter put it to him that he was a pragmatic coach, and that drew a bit of a smile, and he said, "Oh, that's the first time I've heard that one." And then he said, "Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to offend." He said, no, it's just last season when we were winning games 3-2, I was getting labelled gung-ho, and now I'm pragmatic. And the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. We talked about sort of Russell Martin sticking rigidly to these possession principles and not bending from that. I think Kieran McKenna is an adaptive coach. I think he has his base principles that he works off, which is ultimately he wants to entertain the crowd and is always mindful that it's an entertainment business, but he can also adapt within games and for certain games. And I think we saw that at the weekend. So really, really good game. The latest in a long line of them.
Typically, they are now drilling in my kitchen. You can probably hear that behind me, AJ. So do you want to give us your thoughts on the game, and I'll go on mute for a bit, and hopefully by the time you finish talking, they'll have stopped this infernal racket.
By the time I finish talking, the kitchen will be completed and the builders will be out, I'd imagine. I think, following on from what Stu said, the point is fantastic. The result's fantastic, given what Aston Villa have done so far this season in terms of, and they've won every single one of their games in all competitions apart from their home match against Arsenal, which you can accept. And to go and do that at home, yeah, really fantastic result. In terms of the actual match itself and the performance, it was quite a strange one. And I said this to Stu at halftime, where we've had three goals and it didn't really feel like this end-to-end boxing match where it's just like one slug after another and going really at it. But these were two sides that were quite calculated and clinical in what they were trying to do, where Town strike first and then the momentum swings the other way. But at that point, it wasn't like Aston Villa were piling on the pressure. They just took two really nice moments, one off a mistake and one that they worked really, really well. And then from there, I think that, yeah, we all know what the second half was like. I think that Town's approach to that was probably the most impressive part of it. And we saw that a little bit against Fulham, I'd say would be the most similar game rather than any of the other ones, because in the other games, even in halves, like specific halves, you've got to have a balance of doing certain things. But I think they were so quite clearly the better team in the second half in terms of the chances they were making, in terms of really putting on the pressure, then getting that equaliser. And from that point on, especially like from the last 20 minutes or so, I thought they were really fantastic, the opportunities they had. Another day, those go in. You're looking at a game where they could have scored 3, 4, 5, actually, based on the opportunities they had. And to say that against a Villa side who are so resilient defensively, who've been such a strong team for such a long time, I think, yeah, it's a fantastic point. But the performance deserves huge recognition as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And there's only one place to start, speaking of brilliant, and clearly that's the juggernaut. Liam Delap, runaway train, battering ram, tank, absolute chuffing monster, Stewie. How good is Liam Delap?
And the best thing is, Mark, the juggernaut came from my lips, so we haven't cursed him. He didn't come from yours.
Exactly.
So that's fine, I think. Yeah, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? We didn't really know what we were going to get with Liam Delap, how raw he might be. We kind of knew that McKenna liked his powerful running. But his goal record in the Championship was a little underwhelming, if we're honest. And he was a player that played a bit up front, a bit on the wing. He'd had an injury last season. Big responsibility to come in and be the number nine and lead the line, as Kieran McKenna keeps saying, for a Premier League club at 21 years of age. We know Ipswich wanted another striker before the window shut. It didn't happen. But we've very quickly forgotten about that because he's been excellent. Southampton's probably been the only time he's been relatively quiet. In all the other games, he's been a real handful. It's now, if McKenna can just start smoothing out some of the raw edges and getting him to be a bit more consistent game to game within games, Ipswich have got a player on their hands, that's for sure.
Only 21 years old, £15 million. Could have had a hat-trick in this game, AJ. What did you make of his goals? Clearly, the second one stands out. It was a bit of a trademark goal for Liam Delap, wasn't it? Because it's one of these kind of rampaging runs and he sticks a little bit of a showboating, breaking the ankles move on the defender and scores. Your thoughts on big Liam?
Yeah, I'll take the first one on to start in terms of just being in the right place at the right time. He's so good at getting into pockets of space to be unmarked, which I think is, for a player of his size and someone that I'm sure Unai Emery would have picked out before this game, saying, stick to him, because Southampton did that quite well, as Stu said, and they managed to limit him. But no other team have really managed to figure out the spaces he gets into, and Villa had no clue for a lot of this game. And showed with the opening goal where he gets into a little pocket, it gets to Clark's cutback, and there's so much space for him. All the Villa players are on different threats in the box and they've just missed out the actual number nine, probably one that Martinez would be frustrated with. But it is the second goal. I think I've probably watched it back about 40 or 50 times, just in terms of everything about it, in terms of the pass from Amari Hutchinson's beautiful, the run where he comes from deep. He loves just powering down the flank. We've seen that now 3 times, I think, hasn't it been? Where he's quite often got something from those, or at least tested the goalkeeper, hit the post. And this one, he just pushes through, gets into the box. Diego Carlos is there, an experienced defender in Diego Carlos. He's quite a lot older than him and a lot more experienced. Sends him absolutely flying with some nice step overs and the low finish. And I like the name, the juggernaut, right? But one of the standout things for me is that he's so big and powerful, and you'd expect a striker like that to be absolutely crap with the ball at their feet. And his footwork is just fantastic. It's one of the big things that stands out, to be that size and to take on your defender with a couple of step overs, send them the wrong way and score. Yeah, it's not just about being a big, powerful striker. There's a real all-round nature to his game.
He lost his shorts, didn't he, Carlos, with that move? And there was another one he tried, an audacious kind of spin move, which is like a straight out of FIFA. Press X, spin move. If it was, is X. I haven't played FIFA for so long. But yeah, he's really good fun to watch, isn't he? Shall we hear from Kieran McKenna about young Mr. Delap, who I've yet to call Rory, which is a personal victory for myself.
Word on Liam Delap, 2 goals today. He's been a real handful. He seems to have taken to the Premier League pretty well.
He has. Good day for him, and he should be proud. I'm sure his family's proud as well. And yeah, he's had a good start, all in all. He's still, as I've said, he's still very, very young. It's still a lot to be leading the line week in, week out in the Premier League, and there's certainly areas for improvement still. He certainly has, you know, more consistency to come in the game, and I still think he can improve a lot physically, you know, mentally and technically and tactically as well. So he's still got some real growth to come. So to do what he's done in the first, you know, handful of Premier League games, goals he scored, the way he's shown that he can impact the ball in, you know, his hold-up play, his general play, and, you know, some of his defensive work is really coming on well, but still a lot to come. So, yeah, I think he's developing well, and we're really happy to have him here.
That's the exciting thing, isn't it, Stu, about a lot of these Ipswich Town players? We said there, Delap's only 21, and he's already got 3 goals in the Premier League, and you feel like he's only really started to scratch the surface of what he can be. And that's the case with a lot of these players that Town have got under long-term contracts as well.
Yeah, given Kieran McKenna's record of improving pretty much every player that he's worked with so far, that is the most exciting bit about when you look at the recruitment this summer, the age profile, especially with young English British players. We know that their value can skyrocket if you can turn them into something special. And with people like Delap and Amari Hutchinson, who I think has got other gears to go through as a player, still only 20. Jacob Greaves, only 24 still. It's exciting what Kieran McKenna can do with these players. So, Liam Delap. As Alex rightly says, it's not just been about the goals and the highlight reels moments with him bursting past Kwanzaa down the left against Liverpool. Like you said, that he almost did it to Carlos again with what would, I would probably call that a Maradona turn. You know, when you stand on the ball with one foot and then kind of pirouette over the top of it with the other. Very nearly did him, didn't he? That just shows you the confidence that he's got at the moment. And I think the crowd plays a big part in that as well, and sort of giving that belief to players to try these things. So, Liam Delap, I think, is an exciting player.
Mm. Right then, AJ, before we go on to other exciting things and good things to talk about, shall we tackle the bad things, which were the Villa goals? And we talked a lot. I mean, I've sung Jacob Greaves' praises on here a lot, but clearly he makes an error with the first goal, with the clearance. He goes to leather. It doesn't quite get the connection he wants, and it ends up straight at the feet of Rodgers, isn't it? I mean, this is one of the things that we've said before in the Premier League. You make a mistake in the Premier League, more often than not, you're going to get punished, and that wouldn't happen necessarily in the Championship. And indeed, they did get punished. So what did you make of the two Villa goals, AJ?
The pre-match press conference curse. Put a player up for media and then they'll do that. Yeah. Obviously, as he was going to clear the ball, the only thing in his head at that point was, are there more wheels or doors in the world?
maybe he just thought of the answer as he went to kick that ball.
Yeah, just as he went to do it. It's kind of one that, actually, up until that point, the way that he won back the ball was quite good. And he just goes from hero to zero. It's a bit of a frustrating one for him, I think, because when you look at how he goes to kick it, I think he gets everything right. And I can't quite figure out what goes wrong. So is there not enough contact on it? It looks like it's just the height more than anything in terms. Yeah. He really tries to get the power behind it, but it just doesn't work out. Lands at the feet of Rodgers. It's a quick 1-2. And these are really intelligent footballers where, as you say, in the Championship, you will have that time and opportunity to reset and be able to get back into your defensive shape, because often the attackers aren't going to take a one-touch finish, or they're not going to have the football intelligence to be able to do what Morgan Rodgers did, which was to combine with Watkins to drag the entire defensive line out of shape, because obviously Ipswich's defenders at that point are thinking, oh no, what now? Because they've got the ball on the edge of our box. So they have that moment. Rodgers really expertly works there just to drag them away, and it opens up so much space for the shot. I feel a bit bad for Muric in that situation. And then with the second goal, there are things you can point out with it, but I think so much of it is about Villa's quality, where they work it down the right. Leif Davis been really good against Leon Bailey 1v1 for most of this game, and the way that they do it is they end up, they get into a crossing position, but I think they almost think, oh, you know what, we haven't quite worked this well enough, and they end up playing it back round again, which catches Town a little bit out, ends up at Bailey again, who's then in a better position. The cross is good. Watkins' movement, we talk about him being a good finisher and really fast and all those things, but his positioning is just so impressive. The way that he gets himself into the perfect area between Dar O'Shea and Axel Tuanzebe, he almost doesn't really have to jump. The cross is so close to the goalkeeper, to the goal. It's a point-blank range header, pretty much. And you can pick bits apart in that. I've seen people say Muric should come for it there, but it's quite close. Do the defenders have to do better? Potentially in terms of nullifying Watkins, it was only the only real opportunity that I can think of, maybe Stu can say otherwise, that I can think of that he had, to be honest. I think that Town dealt with his threat quite well. But it's just you give him that one opportunity, that one little bit of space, and he'll punish you. And that's what they did. They just left him that little gap in the middle of the two defenders. And the header's good, and that's the goal to put them ahead. That's the quality that you have when you have Champions League level players.
Okay, Stu. So we've said two truisms in the Premier League. You make mistakes, you're going to get punished more often than not. And also the classic football cliche, you've got to take your chances. And Town, I don't know whether you could say they were profligate in this game, but they certainly had opportunities. Clearly, Liam Delap had that opportunity that was a good save. Calvin Phillips absolutely murdered the ball. And that was a tremendous save, wasn't it, from Martinez. They had other opportunities as well. Is that something to be concerned about, maybe, that Town, I mean, in those scenarios, clearly there were two good saves, but do you think that Town maybe are guilty at times generally of not taking their chances thus far?
I think that's something to be encouraged by. I would flip that around, because the first five games, the narrative was Ipswich aren't creating enough. I think they were bottom of the table in terms of shots, chances created, XG, all that sort of stuff. Kieran McKenna kept saying, I don't think we're far away. I don't think we're far away. We're working good positions. We now need to, the next step is to turn good positions into good chances. Mm. And Ipswich took a big step forward in this game. They scored two. They could have scored a lot more. Good response to the equaliser going in. If you mentioned a few chances there, but you remember Axel Tuanzebe had a header onto the roof of the net. The better chance came a minute later where Davis crossed and Jack Clark couldn't quite get over the top of the ball and headed over the bar. You've mentioned the two big ones before half-time. Phillips absolutely bludgeoned that sort of half-volley following a corner situation. The big one really was the Delap one-on-one, and we're talking about the room for improvement for Liam Delap is being able to score those sort of chances, as well as the rampaging runs and the highlights reel ones. They're more the bread and butter ones. That was a hell of a pass from Leif Davis, and tries to give Martinez the eyes. It's a great save. It's reminiscent of his save against Mbappe in the World Cup final in extra. Was that one in extra time when he made that save, or right at the end of the 90? Can't quite remember. But for me, the fact that the number of chances created was encouraging and a step forward. And of course, we hope that the conversion rate will improve. But I'm heartened by the fact that Ipswich can create chances at this level.
Excellent. Right, you know what I want to talk about now? It's top dribbly boy, Jack Clark, who obviously made his full and Premier League debut in this game. And I thought he was brilliant. He's really good fun to watch. I wish he'd wear clothes that fit him, but if it makes him feel good about himself, I'm all for it. What did you make of Jack Clark on his full debut, AJ?
We noticed that he is the polar opposite in this situation to Delap, where Delap has the tightest of tight shorts. And then Jack Clark, yeah, like proper muscle man, but he's really got them fitted. They almost look like cycling shorts. And then you've got Jack Clark, who's got size like 4XL shorts that I assume he's just done the waistband up really tight. And every once in a while, he just has to like pull them up. Really impressed. I think it has been time for this one. And I understand why he's been eased in, because things have gone quite well with the three behind that they've had, or at least having Hutchinson and Smodics. And it felt like Smodics has struggled in a couple of the games where Town haven't had much of the ball or that many touches, and it's been hard to get him in some of those games. And I just think flipping the dynamic was a suitable thing here to have a different kind of player on there, see what it's like to bring Smodics off the bench. Different games come with different game plans, and this was a really good one for Jack Clark. I think that coming up against a right-sided defender who's not a natural right-back in Konsa helped him a lot. There were a couple of occasions in the first half where he probably gave away the ball a little bit too much, but he grew into it really, really nicely and won that battle a lot down the flank, gets in some good positions. He's an intelligent footballer in terms of knowing what to do. His decision-making is really, really good. I've found good crosses, good ways to win corners, create opportunities, get into the final third. Movement's good. Again, I think that's a development as well, where in some of the games where he's come on, I remember him coming on against Southampton and he did his traditional little jink inside and then take aim from distance, and he fired one into Rosette at St Mary's. And already just from a week on from that, you can just see that it was a slightly different approach to this one. I don't know whether that comes with being a starter, whether Kieran McKenna's said some things to him in midweek, but already I can see a big change in him. And I think he's one that will improve hugely as the season goes on. And this is the performance that we all wanted to see from Jack Clark, because as summer signings go, I think he's right towards the top of the excitement level.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought he was really good. And that, obviously I'm biased because I love him. But Stewie, what did you make of him?
Yeah, he brings something completely different to the team than Sammy Smodics. Smodics is an out and out goal scorer. He's a last line runner. He's more of a striker than a wide man. He's very much the inside left forward that we know Ipswich kind of play with. Clark's more of a winger, isn't he? He's as we say, he's top dribbly boy, and he's fun to watch. And that seemed to complement the left side with Leif Davis. You're always looking for kind of natural partnerships to be struck up, and those two seem to work off each other really well. Mentioned the header that he just put over. It was his assist, obviously, for the Delap opener. Nice little cutback, which we're used to seeing Leif Davis provide. There was a nice little moment in the second half with, I think it was O'Shea, played a raking pass out to the left, and Davis played this beautifully cushioned pass straight into the
that
path.
Was lovely. That was so nice.
It was really nice, and Clark kind of read that straight away and was on it in a flash. I remember Clark skipping away from Onana in midfield, you know, the big Belgian powerhouse who looks absolutely huge in the flesh, but Clark just sort of skipped away from him and left him sort of trailing in his wake. So encouraging signs from Jack Clark. And that's not to say that, you know, it has to be him or Smodics, and one is better than the other. They're different types of players, and I'm sure Kieran McKenna will carefully choose when to deploy each of them. But really fun to watch. Nice little partnership going down that left side, and that's where Ipswich looked the strongest for sure.
Absolutely. Jack Clark should start every game as far as I'm concerned. shall we stick with the left side though, Stu? Because I know you were particularly impressed with Leif Davis as well yesterday. I think you said that he was your pick for player of the match, in fact.
Bold call given what Liam Delap did and two goals. Yeah. And maybe I'm being a little bit contrary, but I just I wanted to pick Leif out really because I wasn't sure that we all knew he was Premier League ready, but defensively it was clearly going to be a bigger test for him so far. And you look at the wingers that he's come up against so far, from Savinho, who did he have in game one for Liverpool? Remind me who they had on the right.
Mo Salah, I think.
Just Salah.
Salah on the right or the left. It was Salah. Salah was on the right, wasn't he?
Lots of good action shots with those two battling each other. Yeah.
Yeah. Even at Southampton, he had the young lad, again, whose name escapes me.
Tyler Dibbling.
Dibbling, yes. Thank you. So he's been up against some really good wingers so far. And Kieran McKenna said he wasn't happy with his performance at St Mary's. And the Clark dynamic helped him, but this was the tireless up and down Leif Davis running and attacking contribution that we've come to know and love. But defensively, up against a really tough opponent in Leon Bailey, I thought he was solid as well. So it was a big step forward there for him. It's led to reporters afterwards asking him about England and whether that might come. And, you know, he was easy to overlook because he was just a championship player last season, but with the dearth of left back options for England at the moment, you wonder if Lee Carsley or as and when a new manager comes in might just be having a look at him sooner rather than later. We'll see.
I hope so, because that was one of my predictions pre-season. Let's hear from Leif Davis, shall we? And then we can talk a little bit more about it.
Could have took 3 points from the game. We created a lot of chances as well in the game. But obviously, they got their two-goal lead and we dropped off a little bit. But then once they scored the second goal, I think we went back for it again. It's like it's a negative when we go behind, and it's a negative, but then it gets we're going again when they go for the goal in front. But yeah, the lads didn't stop till the final whistle. The lads that came on in the 60th minute ran the heart off like they always do. So yeah, all around it was a good performance. Yeah, he's a handful. You see there, for the second goal, that's his quality. He uses his body, runs hard, a strong lad, good with the ball at his feet. And the second goal, he sat him down really, didn't he? With a little scoop, then how composed he is in front of goal. Yeah, he missed that one in the first half, but he didn't let it get to him. Yeah, he went again and got what he deserved.
Obviously, Leif there talking about Liam Delap in the second half of that chat. I hope he treated himself to a flight to America last night, Leif, as a little treat for a good game. AJ, do you want to talk a little bit about, I mean, clearly it's something we've spoken about before, the knock on Leif potentially going to the Premier League was defensively. We didn't know a lot about him. He didn't really have to do a lot of that in the Championship. What have you made of him in terms of his adaptation thus far? Because it seems to me like he's getting better pretty much every time we see him.
Sounds like I spoke to him on the side of a motorway in that.
Yeah, the mix though.
Yeah, the mix zone's good fun. Yeah, it's just a little bit noisy if you're doing something like that. Overall, been impressed with Leif Davis, I think. Pardon me. He's grown, yeah, week on week. I think he actually dealt with the Liverpool game quite well. He just got punished for a couple of moments. And then from there, I think that the City game was a tough one, wasn't it? Where he gives away the penalty. But then on the flip side, he goes up the other end and probably should have had a penalty himself for that Savinho moment. So I think those first games were ones where he was aware, and you would have been made aware in pre-season, that you're not going to have the opportunities to really do what you want to do going forward, because you're going to have your hands full against top opponents. And you're probably looking at the Fulham game and thinking, oh, this is a good opportunity for me to do that. And then coming up against someone like Adama Traore, who looks like all three of us put together. He's probably still be bigger.
Stu's a big lad now.
Yeah, that is true, but I don't know with us two added on. Ooh, yeah. Adama Traore, yeah, big guy, and he learnt that one the hard way early on in that game, didn't he? Ran into him and got floored quite early. And we're just starting to see a bit more. I mean, even in that game there, he had the opportunity to come forward and play the pass. Admittedly, it's probably one of the easier assists he'll have this season for that one. But just game on game, you're starting to see him get more into that flow of the attacking Leif Davis, of getting forward. A little bit confused as to why Villa left him pretty unmarked in this game, to be honest, because a lot of the times teams will look at him and say, right, let's put a couple of people on him, or let's make sure we've always got someone tracking his movements at all time. And with this one, there were quite a few occasions where you're looking at him and he's on the other side with no one on him. And that was the chances that he had to go and get forward. Lots of good crosses into the box, lots of good movement, lots of good running. He enjoyed it. You could tell he was enjoying his football. And this was the performance which felt like Championship Leif Davis, of just being a real creative powerhouse. He wasn't on every set piece this time, which is interesting, with Calvin Phillips taking a few corners, which he referenced in his post-match bit. So Calvin's got a good cross into the box. They wanted to take advantage of that, and Jack Clark took some as well. And despite that, he created 7 chances in that game, which was the most of anyone. Then that's factoring he didn't take every set piece. So I think that's a sign of his constant progression, and the fact that in 1v1s, I'd say mostly, yeah, he's had some tough moments, but mostly I've been really impressed with him. These are not Championship attackers he's been coming up against. These are some of the best players in the world, and I can't think of one that's made him look stupid or really embarrassed him over the course of 90 minutes. He's largely had pretty good moments against all of them.
I think this is why he's a prime example of having that sort of EFL grounding. Had he been thrown in at the deep end straight into Premier League football for Leeds or whatever early in his career, that could have had the potential to really knock his confidence, and because defensively he wasn't ready for that. Ultimately, I think that's probably why Leeds made the difficult decision to let him go. And we saw it in the early days in League One that there was some defensive vulnerability. Stick an aerial ball on top of him at the far post, and that was a problem. But he's grown and grown, and the experiences that he's picked up in League One and the Championship have made him ready for the Premier League. Certain parts of his game, as we know, were always ready, but it's the other stuff. You have to be, we know McKenna likes players to have superpowers, but you have to have an element of all-roundness to you. You can't have too many glaring weaknesses in the Premier League or you get found out. And that's the bit that's impressed me the most with Leaf is how he's kind of grown from game to game facing some of the opponents that we've mentioned. So, hopefully that him and potentially Jack Clark can get that going. And we've always talked about the right side being an area where Ipswich's threat comes from. If they can threaten down both, then all the better.
100%. And just a reminder, friends, one of my two hot takes pre-season was that Leif Davis and Calvin Phillips would both get picked for England. So just looking forward to that coming to fruition. I also predicted, of course, that Town would beat Aston Villa. So one more chance for that to come true. Although they were close. I might claim that as a moral victory. Alex, one of the other talking points in this game, Sam Morsey, and I guess it's a general talking point, picked up his fourth booking of the season. So he's already, six games in, he's already only one booking away from a suspension. And there's definitely an argument that he could even have been sent off.
Yeah, trademark Sam Morsey, this one. I think he committed six fouls in this game. I think he might have had something like, he committed two, and I think the third one was a yellow card, and then he had more after that. So he was lucky to get away with some of it. I think that the frustration obviously comes with the one where he's already on a yellow card and he runs over the top of... Can you remind me he runs over?
Well, there was a couple, wasn't there, while he was on a booking. There's one where he sort of ran across the hills of Tielemans.
Yeah.
And then he stands on Philogene's foot, doesn't he?
Oh, it was Philogene,
a little bit later on.
Yeah, and it's one of those where VAR can't do anything about it because it's not a red card. It's nothing like that. But there's an argument it's a yellow card, but VAR can't check yellow cards. So you then with the referee's decision on that one, and I think that was a moment that Unai Emery probably didn't look too happy with on the touchline. So, yeah, I think that this is the balance that you have with someone like him. He was important in this game. His passing accuracy was really good. He ran things when he had opportunities on the ball. I like that. I mean, there was one moment where he gave it away and he just gets back up and he goes and wins it back literally 2 seconds later. Such determination and the aggression is a big part of his game, and that's what makes him a good player. But it's also what makes him someone who's liable to picking up these bookings and potentially then red cards. Was he lucky to get away with not getting one in this game? You'd probably say so, but now he's on four. I think there's only five players in the league who are on four. He's one of those. I think quite a few people on Twitter who aren't used to Sam Morsey, those who are focused on the Premier League, have called him like a psychopath and stuff like that for his overly aggressive nature at times. So he's starting to build up that reputation in a way which maybe won't help in that sense. But also, as we've said every time this has happened, it's part of his game. If you tell him not to do that, he's not going to be the same kind of player. So I'd rather he do that and gets the suspensions and they can bring in a Kyuste or a Luongo or potentially a Jack Taylor or someone like that just for the game or however long he's out, and they've got the depth there to deal with that. But I'd rather be able to do that and make those changes than say to Sam, change your game and he's not going to be the same player.
I'm going to give him just the benefit of the doubt here because he's someone who plays on the edge in so many ways. On the edge aggressively in terms of walking that disciplinary tightrope, and on the edge in the way he kind of the role he has in the team in receiving the ball in tight areas. We saw so many times that trademark, give it to me. If I'm marked, I'll have the ball. And he's got that little 360 turn where he can use his arms, use his body, shield the ball, and keep possession. So we keep talking about him being this kind of mentality monster who's, you know, dialed in and wanting to learn and all of that. And we've seen it before. He's gone through these huge stretches of games where we think he's got no chance of getting suspended, and he can adapt his game. And maybe, just maybe, I mean, I did think he saw a little bit of red mist in that early in that second half where a couple of fouls weren't given against him. And he was in the referee's ear, and I just thought, just calm it down a little bit. You're on the edge here, Sam. But maybe he recognised that there was sometimes you've got to play the referee, and the referee's already set his benchmark of what the threshold for fouls were, and it was quite high in terms of the stuff that was going on. So he thought, well, if I'm not getting given against me, I've got to meet fire with fire. And but he certainly pushed it right to the very limit. And look. I think if you take your blue tinted spectacles off, you'd have wanted him getting a second yellow card if it was the opposition player, and that would have completely changed the game against an opponent of Villa's stature. But he's done it before. We'll see if he do it again. I think having done four bookings in six Premier League games, I'd be surprised at how many do we know off the. Do you know off the top of your head, Alex, how many he's got to get through now? I don't. So, but it will be several. I'll have to.
I'll find out before the end of this and see
where the cutoff point is. We'll be a little bit further down the road before the slate is wiped clean.
Yeah, he certainly looked on TV. He looked fairly nervous after committing that foul where there was a lot of chat around him, maybe deserving a second yellow for it. While AJ looks that up, Stewie, we've joked there. Can I come to you, AJ? Have you got the stat?
I believe this is game 19 for the five yellow card one. So
that's a long time.
Are we on game seven? Game seven. I'm going to be honest here. Hot take. I think Sam Morsy is going to pick up a suspension for his five yellow cards before the cutoff point. But who knows? Maybe he's a listener and he's going to now prove me wrong massively. That would be probably the tightest of tight ropes.
Four and six, and he's now got to get through 13 games without one. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, game 19 for Ipswich, is anyone off the top of the head know roughly where that would put?
Getting us towards Christmas time, is it? I would have thought.
I'd be able to, let's have a look. Game 19 is going to be Chelsea at home on the 29th.
Okay.
So quite a few games before then to get through without a booking. Good luck, Sam.
Just on that general topic, AJ, one of our columnists, Terry Hunt, wrote this morning that he thinks at times Town are slightly harshly done by the referees, being a newly promoted side and not one of the big ones, as it were. And he wrote today that the rest might as well just book Sam Morsy in the tunnel. It's sort of getting that reputation.
Look, come on. The crowd reacted to that booking like it was right on half time, as if it was a complete travesty. That was a totting up one. It was a borderline. If that was the first incident, you'd have been a bit annoyed by that. I'm just going to remind myself of who it was. It was right in stoppage time. It sort of bundled into Morgan Rogers from behind, a bit of a clumsy one, which on its own probably wasn't a yellow card booking, but he'd already had two very similar ones earlier in the game. So it was pretty clear that the next foul was going to be a yellow. I don't think there can be any complaints there.
I do think with that one, I'm not sure, and have to ask the fans who reacted to this one, but I think that Liam Delap got booked in the aftermath of this for having a bit of a go at the referee, which was not taken kindly by, I can't remember, who was the referee?
Stuart Atwell, I think.
Stuart Atwell for this one. So I think that might have been at least part of the reaction at halftime for that one. Yeah. It's hard to sometimes look at these games without your blue tinted spectacles, isn't it? Where you've got to focus really objectively on the referee performance. Because at the same time, I've seen Aston Villa fans who are livid about that. And you can argue that again with the Sam Morsy incident, and there'll be other bits. And then you're looking at, I don't think there are any kind of major incidents, but it's also fans will think about the 50-50s that go their way and or don't go their way and things like that. And there have been games where I've looked at it and thought, oh, I'm not really sure about kind of the balance of how this is going in terms of the fouls. And I think it does change week on week. I'm not sure whether it's a thing about being a newly promoted side. I'm not too sure.
I think sometimes people are looking for something that's not there, if I'm honest. There was a valid conversation to be had around it. The first time I really thought about that was after the Man City game, where you go, well, VAR was used for one penalty, but then it wasn't at the other end. And And then that makes you kind of, and then it's not really discussed too much in the wider media. And that was the first time that made me stop and think. But I haven't really got any issues with Saturday's game. I think sometimes you can go looking for something that's not there.
The Premier League is a bastion of fair play and equality. I'd just like to get that on the record. Stewie, anything else to mention from this game? I mean, we've sung the praises there of Liam Delap and Leif Davis and Jack Clark. Is there anyone else you want to highlight? I mean, Amari Hutchinson, I thought, had a good game. Anything else you want to highlight?
Yeah, I mean, everyone had good games, really. They have to get a result like that against Aston Villa. And the way they finished the match, Aston Villa has scored a lot of late goals. They've been the team that have scored late this season. So for Ipswich to look the more likely to win it, the subs came on and make an impact. I think that's really helped in the last few games with these increased options. I love that moment where George Hurst ran the channel, won a corner in stoppage time and turned and whipped up the crowd. And Portman Road is going to be an intimidating place for teams to come now. We hoped that would be the case going into it, but I think teams now, when they're doing their research, will look at the way Liverpool were penned back, how Fulham were on the ropes, how Villa were on the ropes. It's not going to be a place that teams relish coming to, that's for sure. So there were two sort of iterations of Ipswich in this game. First half, as Kieran McKenna says, they were a bit too sort of deep and passive for his liking at times, and that sort of surprised us. This wasn't the kind of front foot Ipswich, despite the chances that they created on the counter. There were too many moments where they sat back and tried to soak up pressure. They were better in the second half when they pressed high and got in faces. And I think that's the best version of Ipswich Town. But we can't have it always. One minute, we've been talking about game management. And when you concede, sometimes you just got to be smart and shut up shop and ride out the next few minutes, because you don't concede goal two and three. And then in the next breath, I'm saying, oh, they got a little bit too deep there and invited pressure. So they're just trying to find the right balance between that. But overall, I think everyone went away with a big smile on their face from this, and can't wait for the next home games to come around, because they're big ones when you look at the opposition that's coming to Portman Road next.
They certainly are. AJ, just on the topic of Town making it four games in the Premier League unbeaten. Yes, they've not won a game yet. We'll come to that shortly. But they've only lost to Man City and Liverpool. Two of the sides will be right up there. Do you think there's a danger that people kind of overlook just how hard it is to go four games unbeaten generally in the Premier League, and what an achievement it is for a side that have basically just come from League One through the Championship and into the Premier League and then gone four games unbeaten? It's quite a thing, isn't it?
Massively. And it's not like they've gone unbeaten against nothing sides. They've gone unbeaten by going to Brighton, who at the time were right towards the top of the division, and went there and managed to put in a really strong defensive display. They had the Fulham game where they could have won it. They had Southampton, who, I mean, probably when you compare it to the other games, was a bit of an off day for Ipswich, and they still went and got a result. And then this one coming up against the Champions League team, these are not nothing opponents, they're not nothing games, that they're good results to have. And I think that there's a lot of talk about the win. They do need to get the win. I think almost more than anything, it's about getting the monkey off the back. I think in terms of when you're looking at the points and the table, it is really early to start doing that, of course. But you look at it, and they've got Everton did that. Everton got their first win. And Town are above them without having won a game. And OK, that might be on goal difference, but it shows that it's not all about getting 3 points. It is about also going and get these other results. It's not always, oh, I'm frustrated that we didn't get the win in this game, in this game, in this game. These are really good results to have. And I think that definitely internally we're feeling that for sure. The fact that they picked up 4 points from their first six games against really tough opponents. Externally, are we starting to see it a bit more? I mean, I touched on this last week where some of the national narrative, I was a little bit frustrated and disappointed by, given how well I thought they'd done. And having come up from two divisions with a squad that had largely stayed the same, I think maybe things are starting to change. I like the reaction on Match of the Day, for example, last night. And hopefully they can keep on doing this and building on this, and the results will keep coming. Four matches unbeaten, as you say, is something that not many teams, I'd say, do. It'd be worth going to have a look through and seeing quite how many managed to do it.
I've just been doing just that, Alex, while you were talking, actually.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a slog, but I'm looking at the table last season. Sheffield United didn't didn't do it all last season. Burnley only did it very late in the season. Luton didn't manage it. Forest didn't manage it. So, as you said, it's a rare feat, and it's not to be underestimated at all.
Right, and Stu, to borrow a phrase from my American cousins, though, so they're four games unbeaten, but now the rubber really meets the road in the next kind of run of games, because first six games, you play Man City, you play Liverpool, you play Aston Villa, all top sides in the Premier League. And then you look at the run now, next few games, there are sides in and around it, as they say, with Ipswich Town. So obviously you've got the likes of West Ham this weekend, there's Everton in there, there's Brentford, there's Leicester. These are all sides that potentially could be battling out with Town at the end of the season. So just how important is this next run of games? I listened to your predictions on last week's show when I was running, and it made me a bit sad because every game it felt like you're going, no, they're going to lose, aren't they? Or only get drawn. Well,
I was the more pessimistic of the scale, and I'm always happy to be proved wrong. So they're a point up on what I predicted already. I think yourself aside, who stuck to your Aston Villa win from a month or so ago, I think the other three of us all went for defeats, and I don't think I think most of 9 out of 10 Ipswich fans probably would have, if they were really had a gun held to their head, would have thought that Saturday was a defeat. So it's a point up in that respect, and this game is all about vibes, as we know. We've been discussing that. It's all about momentum. It's all about feeling. And Ipswich have got bags of positivity around them at the moment. They've laid some really solid building blocks for this season, as they did last year with some hard-fought 1-0 wins away that kind of gave them a platform to kick on from. Can they do so again? On the theme of vibes, you look at some of the teams that they're coming up against, and that all in the garden is not so rosy at places like West Ham and Everton and Leicester. And the Everton and Leicester games are both here on Suffolk soil. And if that 12-man factor can come into play again, and Ipswich can be right, fully on their mettle, then opportunity knocks.
What was that stat as well? I forget it. What it exactly was, Stu, in your Stu says this morning. But is it they've lost 2 out of 51 league games at home, which since losing to Cambridge, which I think was what, April 20 something. I can't remember the exact stat, but it's a fairly extraordinary stat, which just shows how good they are at Portman Road, does it not?
It does, So that was the season, before League One promotion. If you remember, there was a shock 1-0 home defeat to Alex's boys.
Can I just point this out, that in this time when that happened, so I was covering Cambridge at this point, and in this time, I covered Cambridge till the end of the season. I went to cover Millwall. I covered Ipswich in promotion, and now covering Ipswich in the Premier League. In that space of time since that one, I was covering Cambridge at Portman Road for that match, and all of that. And they've only lost, how many was it? Did you say
two games at Portman Road? So that was a day. I'll rewind you. It was April 2nd, 2022. Joe Ironside scored the winner for Cambridge in the
big
second
header
half.
From a free kick. Yeah,
get over it.
Since then, so that season then ended. They had a 2-2 draw against Wigan and a 4-0 win against Charlton on the final day to go off into the summer with a bit of positivity. And then in the League One promotion season, I'm just going to double check this. The only home defeat they had there was to Lincoln, if you remember that, in October time. That was one of those freak games where Ipswich had tons of possession, shots, chances, just couldn't convert them. And Ben House scored his goal in the first half, which was a bit of a sort of a scruffy set piece goal from what I remember. It was in the first half, proved the difference. And the only other team Ipswich have lost to at home in a league game since then has been Liverpool. They didn't lose one at home in the Championship. Is that right? Oh, Alex is listening. Leeds. I've messed up there then. Three.
But still, three defeats in 51.
Was Leeds the only one last year?
Leeds was the only one last year.
Right, three then.
We don't discuss the FA Cup.
So all L teams. So Lincoln.
Liverpool.
Leeds and Liverpool.
And then M for Maidstone in the FA Cup.
Yeah, and then there's been some cup ones,
An absolute freak, another freak result. Shall we talk about, speaking of freak results, FPL, AJ, because I'm sure you want to wax lyrical about your boys. My boys, they're called the Victory Cigars, but I think I should just change the name to Bang Average FC, because I'm pretty much getting the average every week. I rocked up with 44 points this week. I was pretty pleased, if I'm honest, after the initial sadness of seeing Morgan Rogers score. I remembered I'd brought him in this week, so he got me some points. First time I'd captained Haaland, and of course he does nothing.
The Mark Sweet Heath FA. Curse.
The Mark Heath curse. So my biggest scorers were Salah, Konate, and Rogers. 44 points. I think I am, where am I? Oh, wow. I'm 809th in the KOA league. But I feel like I'm building slowly towards a slightly more consistent team now. I've played my wild card and got Haaland and Salah in. AJ, I know you've moved up the table, I see, and you've gone past Watson. I think so.
I moved up the table last week.
Ah, okay.
Stu, and I've now since gone down a bit because there are obviously a group of people who have had Cole Palmer in the team. I was not one of those. It's the first time I've really kicked myself for a decision of not having a certain player in there, and he's the one who's made me pay a little bit. I don't think any of us have Cole Palmer. I don't think Ross has Cole Palmer either.
Cole Palmer until I played my wild card and brought my salary in.
Ouch. Oh, yeah. One of the bits that Stu said to me last week is that he's finding that everyone's teams are starting to look the same. And when you read out the people you've got points for you last week, I had all of those. And Ollie Watkins is the only difference that I had in there. So Konate, I think, did Saka. I thought he got something, but it looks like he didn't. Morgan Rogers got 7, Mo Salah 10, Ollie Watkins 11. Annoyingly had Fabio Carvalho on my bench. He got an assist against West Ham. So I got 50 overall, which is all right. It's just above average, but it's definitely the Cole Palmer thing that has let me down a little bit with that one.
How did you get on, Watson?
Bored of it. Bored of the FPL league now.
Hold on. Last week, I'm sure you said you were bang into it.
Yeah, I've got 30-odd points this week. I've massively down the table. The team name is Don't Look at the Table for that very reason. No, I'm not going to just chuck it away and say I don't care anymore. I had a bad week, so might have to consider the wild card.
This is your karma for your absolutely awful decision, like proper treason to triple captain Erling Haaland against Ipswich.
No room for sentiment.
It's coming back now. Yeah. Ouch.
I just like winding Alex up now on Saturday. I put in our group chat that I put Cole Palmer in for Mo Salah, and
triple captained him, and then I had this moment of like my heart dropped, and then it dawned on me, I was like, hang on, that can't be right.
How many seconds before you looked up my team when I dropped that text in?
Well, I knew that you hadn't triple captained. That took about 5 to 10 seconds, and then about 5 seconds after that again, I then hopped on FPL to double check that you hadn't put him in, which I then checked that you hadn't, and then that was a big
superb. Right then, I should just mention, I think your Wi-Fi went a little bit out there, AJ. I think we're going to be okay. We've almost come to the end. Just mention we have a new leader in the KOA league as well. Skyline Drifters, Mike Marriott, who got 75 points this week. Obviously had Cole Palmer on his side. He had Ollie Watkins, Mo Salah, Van de Ven as well at Spurs, Morgan Rogers. So he had a very good week, and he's our new leader. Second is Morsey Code, excellent, with Daniel Gant. And then our relatively long-time leader, Kev H., 17 going under 0-0, is in third. So Mike Marriott top, Daniel Gant second, Kev H third. Anything else to mention, boys, before we take our leave? How's your book going, Stu? Because every time I speak to you, those boxes behind you, which once reached the ceiling, are slowly going down. So booked an all-inclusive to Bora Bora or something for Christmas?
Yeah, you can anticipate my my resignation letter anytime soon.
Just written on money.
Or I might just do this one sort of from the Maldives. You'll suddenly see a new backdrop soon. No, sadly not. But the stock is starting to dwindle. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to give it another little plug. Seeing as I missed out on the chance to share it with the nation, on Five Live at the weekend. I might have just tried to slip that in at the end. I think it's fair to say we're down to limited stock now. I don't want to overplay it, but if you do want one, if you're thinking about getting one, for it's a great Christmas present.
Oh, everybody. Really?
You got to start thinking about these things now. There is. If you want to get a nice signed Jason Dazelle autobiography, drop me in the line at jasondazellebook@gmail.com. Thank you.
I've already started making my Christmas list. At the end of September every year, I start drawing up a list of things I'm going to buy for people and their estimated cost. So that's already happened. And obviously, if I had an Ipswich Town fan in my life, Stewie, I'm married to a Leicester City fan, so I don't think she'd be too interested in a Jason Dazelle book. But if I was married to an Ipswich fan, that'd be top of my list. And if stock is dwindling, Stu, simple economics dictates you must start to raise the price. High demand, low stock. No. So the books will be retailing at £50 quite soon.
No, I mean, it is available at all good retailers, including the club shop now. It was quite nice. It's quite cool to walk in there and see it in prime position at the weekend.
AJ, we now share something else as well as a love of Father Ted. We're now mates on Duolingo. I am currently riding 160-something plus day streak learning Italian, which is great. I don't know how to say that in Italian. And you, I think, have come slightly late to the party, but you're riding a quite impressive streak yourself, and you're learning German, as I understand it.
I am, yeah. I have a love-hate relationship with Duolingo, where I have on multiple occasions started it and then stopped it and started it and stopped it. And then the passive-aggressive owl starts coming for you. And he starts like emailing you, and I feel like at some point he's going to start sending death threats or something like that. But at this point, he's happy because I have a streak that is over 70 days, which makes me feel bad. Then when I look at other people that I follow and they're like on hundreds and thousands and stuff like that. But yeah, getting there slowly. I can tell you that the dog did not go to the cinema and things like that. So I'm learning all the useful phrases that I'll need to know when Town returns to Germany next time.
As I say, I've been doing it for 160 plus days. And whenever I need to speak Italian, my mind goes blank, as it just did then. I was talking to my mum, telling her about Italian because she loves Italy. And she said, right, speak Italian to me then. And I just went, it's like, it just goes completely blank. I do know a lot of words in Italian, honest. But yeah, I'm enjoying Duolingo. Stu, do you fancy learning a language, becoming a polyglot like Alex?
I like the idea of it. I don't like the idea of putting the work into it, sadly. I've got some GCSE German in my locker. Is cinema kino? Have I made that up?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Listed as movie theatre on Duolingo, but yes.
Okay.
There you go. You're already at my level.
There we go.
my high level.
Outstanding.
I think there needs to be a segment in this podcast where you both speak your respective new languages.
Languages sure. Corner. What I really want to do is speak Italian conversationally with Ross, because I think that'd be great fun. Obviously, Ross is Italian, so I'm sure
that should be a TikTok video.
He speaks a lot of Italian. Friends, anything else to mention before I do my shambolic outro and we can crack on with our day and I can go and see what's happening in my kitchen?
You know, you love the transfer window. You're excited about all the drama around Erik ten Hag at Manchester United, because I feel like that's gonna cause another shower of something potentially if that happens. So that would be good fun. At the moment, it looks like they're going to stick with him though.
That was grimly predictable, wasn't it? Anything else from you, Stu? I can hear you tapping away. What are you looking up?
I'm just looking up the translation of "the dog did not go to the cinema." is what I'm doing. Der Hund ging nicht ins Kino.
There you go. That's a take-home message.
Is that right? Alex?
Yeah.
Where else could you get this, friends? In what other podcast could you learn all about Ipswich Town and learn some German into the bargain? Friends, please support our sponsors. Use the code KRA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free deliveries. You start to think about Christmas presents for your nearest and dearest. I'm sure what they want is an intimate shaver, and you can get 20% off using that code at Manscaped. Also, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because it helps lift us visibility-wise in the algorithm in the chart, which means more people can find us. And also follow us across all social medias, Kings of Anger on YouTube, Instagram, the old one, Facebook, TikTok, and X. And I think that's pretty much it, is it not, boys? Have we got anything else to mention? I feel like I'm missing something. Oh, yes, of course. Last day is tomorrow for our latest offer, which is 30% off an annual subscription to everything we do, which is a pretty good saving. Or if you want, if you're not yet to be convinced by what we produce, you can try a month for just £1. That ends tomorrow, though, October the 1st. So if you haven't yet supported, I know thousands of you, literally thousands of you have, and we really appreciate that. If you're not signed up yet, it's a good chance to do that now. And if not, I'm sure, not breaking any trade secrets, there probably will be another offer on the way in the not too distant future.
It's another Christmas present idea. There we go.
Exactly.
Just throwing them at you.
Absolutely. Go get your KOA merch. This is perfect. Yep. Now, get your KOA merch. Give it to someone with a copy of Shoe's book and a subscription to. Oh, and wow.
This is still available in
the Ipswich Town fan in your life. Exactly. You could literally create like a little hamper or a basket with everything.
What a great idea, Alex. Well, that would be superb. So in that hamper, there would be obviously Stu's book signed from the doctor. There would also be this, which I'm holding up for the benefit of viewers, which is the Mission Impossible mag, which is available, I think, in more than 350 retailers around the county and at London Liverpool Street as well. If you are on the train through there, pick that up for yourself. That's obviously the story of last season, which is tremendous. There would clearly be some sort of Manscaped item in there as well. Get yourself some KOA merch.
You're getting me the skull shaver,
I should do. I need to speak to my Manscaped contact, actually. But that would definitely be in your Christmas bag as well. It's really pathetic, isn't it, when people, all they do is just trail their own merch and their products. Embarrassing.
But anyone who creates this hamper will have our eternal respect. We mean this. If you go do the show...
No, they will. We'll absolutely love you. Yeah, absolutely. Friends, I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Ipswich Town have not lost since August 24th. They've gone unbeaten for a month in the Premier League. I didn't honestly think we'd probably be saying that this season. And now, of course, the next step would be to win a game. They're away at West Ham this weekend. We'll be back to break that down later on in the week. Have a great start to the week, and we will speak to you again next time.
Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.